Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Mobrig, and today on Route 51, we drop our regular call-in format so we can bring you the highlights of a forum that took place this past week that asked the question a lot of us are asking, whatever happened to good government in Wisconsin? The forum at UW-Marathon County focused on several challenges facing our representative democracy, intense partisanship, the new voter ID law, a controversial redistricting plan, public financing, the role of money, and the effect of the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision. The panelists are Jay Heck, Executive Director of Common Cause, a nonpartisan group that wants to reform the way money is spent on elections. Also, former Republican State Senator Walter John Chilson, current Democratic State Representative Donna Seidel, former Republican congressional candidate and party leader Kevin Hermaning, and political scientist Eric Giordano, the director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. The forum moderated by Rob Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald. As I said, we're not taking phone calls this hour, but we do want to hear from you. If you go to our Route 51 Facebook page, you can cast a vote on our interactive survey asking the question, what is the major roadblock to good democracy in Wisconsin? You've got four choices: the role of money in politics, redistricting, voter ID, and party polarization. So let's start our coverage with the opening statements of the five panelists, beginning with Jay Heck, the Executive Director of Common Cause.
Justice Louis Brandeis, who was a United States Supreme Court justice in the early part of the century, once called Wisconsin the laboratory of democracy. And in fact, it was, for many, many years, considered the model of state government. It was a state other states wanted to emulate. Unfortunately, those days are long gone. And one of the goals that my organization has, a long-term goal, is to see if we can't somehow put the pieces back to that glass that has been broken over the last dozen years or so. Wisconsin was one of the first states in the country to adopt a public financing system back in the late 1970s in the aftermath of the Watergate scandal. We also now have the dubious distinction of being the first state in the country to completely repeal our public financing system. And it was a system that worked pretty well for some years till about 1986, and then the wheels came off. And special interest groups started getting involved in our politics. WEAC, WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, followed by many, many other special interest groups. Many would suggest these groups do have a right to speak, and I wouldn't disagree with that, but I also think that they have a right to tell us who they are and where their money's coming from, and that's something we increasingly haven't seen in Wisconsin politics. The Citizens United decision, which is a U.S. Supreme Court decision decided about a year and a half ago, broke 100 years of settled law and precedent and opened up the floodgates of corporations and unions to be able to spend unlimited money trying to influence elections at the federal level and at the state level. It repealed laws that have been in place 100 years in Wisconsin that was passed during the administration of Governor Robert La Follette and the presidency of President Theodore Roosevelt. The Supreme Court, 5-4, said essentially that money is speech and that it can speak loudly. Two other quick things. This year earlier, Wisconsin passed a photo voter ID bill. It had been something that had been in play for a number of years. That was not a surprise. What was shocking to me was that it was the most extreme, the most restrictive photo ID bill in the nation. It will be easier to vote in Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, states that traditionally put up roadblocks to voting, than it will be in Wisconsin in the next election. And then finally, I hope that we can discuss a little bit about something that just occurred earlier this year, and that is the redistricting of our state legislative and congressional districts. You know, as recently as 1998, Wisconsin had four very competitive congressional districts. There was obviously a big turnover in 2010. In this district, of course, Congressman Obie retired. But had he not retired, it's hard to say whether it would have been competitive. I think it might have been. I think certainly one person here on the panel thinks it might have been very competitive. But nevertheless, that was a special election. By and large, elections in Wisconsin now are less competitive because of the redistricting program or the redistricting plan that's been pushed through the legislature. And I want to close by saying this. This is a great panel for me. to be on tonight because I really respect all the individuals up here. Most importantly, I'm grateful to you. So thank you for coming, and I look forward really to hearing from you.
That's Jay Heck, the Executive Director of Common Cause at the Forum on Good Government in Wisconsin. Now we'll hear the highlights of the opening statement by Walter John Chilson, Hall of Fame broadcaster and former Republican state senator from Wausau.
I served for 24 years in the state senate, and many people ask me, Walter John, wouldn't you like to be back in the state senate? We need you there now. I said, no, I'd like to be back there, but not the way it is now. Way it was, that'll be fine. Today, I think I would be called a rhino, Republican in name only. What happened to good government in Wisconsin? Well, I think my answer is that Tony Earle and I left state government. It certainly was different then and now. Tiny Krieger, a Republican, Sheehan Donahue, Republican, Larry Day, conservative Democrat, Tony Earle, liberal Democrat, and I often used to ride back and forth to Madison in the same car. And we were friends. We could discuss politics in a very friendly fashion. But today there is total polarity at Madison and in Washington as well. Some observers said that is the problem. On the one hand, they're, for the Democrats, the ultra-liberals are in control, and for Republicans, the ultra-conservatives are in control, and never the twain shall meet. You add to that the awesome and ugly influence that Jay has outlined, the influence of money, huge amounts of money that are now being spent on political campaigns. You said $40 million. I thought it was even $45 million in those recall elections, and that may even be put to shame in the Walker recall elections. Wouldn't it be wonderful if $45 to $50 or $75 million could be collected that easily and go to feed poor people in Wisconsin and elsewhere?
That's former Republican State Senator Walter John Chilson at the Forum on Good Government in Wisconsin. Now we'll hear highlights from the opening statement by Donna Seidel, a current Democratic state representative, also from Wausau.
When we went back to Madison to begin this legislature, this session in January, none of us could imagine that tumultuous times, the sights and the sounds that we were going to experience there. It began with the protests over the collective bargaining changes. It was followed by a hyper-partisan redistricting plan, a plan that was top-down versus bottom-up. Local governments were to draw plans. Local governments had been spending months with public hearings, spending time and taxpayer money drawing their plans. The majority party overruled that, changed the law, and imposed a statewide plan that had been developed in secret. And with those redistricting plans, communities of interest were divided as never happened before. Cities like Beloit and Marshfield and Sheboygan divided in half, and 300,000 people had been essentially disenfranchised. We then saw the voter ID bill, a bill that many of us feel was a solution in search of a problem, will disenfranchise tens of thousands of voters across the state. We know from all kinds of studies being done that nationally, 11% of otherwise eligible voters do not have the photo IDs that would be eligible, and 18% of our seniors do not have these. I have been spending time visiting senior centers in the district, and I have talked to people every week that are incredibly concerned that they're going to have difficulty voting, something that they have been very proud to do all of their lives, many of whom have never missed an election. That, too, is a subject of a court case. The League of Women Voters has filed a case challenging the constitutionality of the current voter ID bill in Wisconsin, and we'll watch as that moves through the state. This is the most polarized, divided state government that we have certainly seen in our lifetimes in Wisconsin. And while voters across the state have very serious disagreements about so many of our critical issues, one issue remains constant and polls very, very high, and that is that people want this legislature, want Wisconsin's government to work together in the best interest of all of our communities. They are demanding that we do that, and that will take rolling up our sleeves and really deciding that we have to compromise. We have to look at a give-and-take strategy, and that is what the people who have sent us to Madison are demanding. And I certainly would like to get back to the days where Walter John and Tony Earl, you know, duked it out on the floor and went in the evening and had a beer together, because people do expect that of us, and they are demanding that of us. And I hope we can get to that point sooner rather than later. Thanks for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Democratic State Representative Donna Seidel of Wausau at the forum, Whatever Happened to Good Government in Wisconsin? Now we'll hear highlights from the opening statement of former Republican congressional candidate Kevin Hermaning, who is also a party leader and a former school board president.
To me, most of the organization's initiatives, most of the moves toward campaign finance reform, toward disclosure, toward redistricting reform, really, to me, come to the issue of the First Amendment and the freedom of speech issues. Freedom of speech is guaranteed, but equality of speech is not. And so that is where we really come down to brass tacks in trying to deal with the challenges and the concerns that I think people have and how they can, quote, improve state or national government. You know, we looked at what's going on in Washington, D.C. and in Madison this year and in the year, last year and a half. We look at the rise of the Tea Parties over the last 2.5 years. We look at what's gone on over the last, I guess, about 50 days now or 40-some days in many cities around the country, the Occupy Wall Street and their sub-organizations around the U.S. And I think it's really a matter of the proverbial pot boiling, or rather I should say simmering, the frog over a long period of time. I think many citizens in our country feel like they are that proverbial frog, and they've watched the government infringe and take and regulate and put in place rules with which they disagree. And so it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, and it certainly isn't to me, that people on both sides of the political fence, last year the Tea Party, this year the recall election advocates and the Occupy Wall Street folks, feel that the only way that they can affect change is by taking what at least those of us up on the panel believe are extreme measures. But when the citizens of Wisconsin in 2010 stepped back and they saw what they as a collective group, maybe not anybody in this room or maybe not a lot of you in this room, but felt the overreaching arm of state government and the overspending of state government, they felt it was time for a change. And apparently, this past year, the side that lost felt that it wasn't right to wait for a full year. Now we are in a perpetual election phase. If the Democrats were to win the state Senate, or they were to achieve their goal of defeating Governor Walker in the recall elections next year, that pendulum swings back and forth faster than ever these days. And the next time it swings back, it's going to take out people who maybe were more willing to consider alternatives to some of the more extreme positions being taken. Now, I do think we have to encourage young people to understand that certainly everyone up at this table believes that elective service and working for elected leaders, as well as being involved in citizen participation in elective politics, is a noble and honorable calling. I very strongly believe that. But it was never intended to be a lifetime career. And I think that's what really hacks a lot of people off in our society today. And when people are trying to protect their rear ends and they're trying to perpetuate a lifetime of elective service at what I would view largely is the public trough, it is not surprising that we see the types of expensive campaigns and outside influences that perpetuate largely the incumbents, not challenger candidates.
That's former Republican congressional candidate and party leader Kevin Hermaning at the forum entitled Whatever Happened to Good Government in Wisconsin. After this short break, we'll hear from political scientist Eric Giordano. I'm Glenn Moberg, and this is a special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
You're listening to a special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, in which we're bringing you highlights of the forum, Whatever Happened to Good Government in Wisconsin. We are not taking calls during this show, but we do invite you to participate in our interactive poll, which you will find on our Route 51 Facebook page, asking the question, what is the major roadblock to good democracy in Wisconsin? You have four choices. They are the role of money in politics, redistricting, voter ID, and party polarization. Coming up next, we'll hear Jay Heck of Common Cause and Republican Party leader Kevin Hermaning respond to a question by Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald about public financing. But first, highlights from the opening statement of Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service.
Are there some reasons to be particularly worried about Wisconsin government and our national government today? My argument would be yes. I think the Citizens United case, as has been pointed out, truly dismantled, in my mind, 30 years of very significant legislation. You could go back to Teddy Roosevelt and say 100 years, as Jay did, but clearly at least 30 years of very strong movement away from trying to have money have the strong influence in politics that it had for so many years. Now, I know that the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, also known as the McCain-Feingold Act, had problems, and it had major loopholes, and I don't think any thinking person thought otherwise. But to overturn this to the degree they did, when in the case itself, Justice Stevens argued, which I think was correct, that they could have overturned this ruling on very narrow grounds. Instead, the court decided to overturn it on very large, sweeping grounds that undermined this principle of previous decisions and their importance and their weight in the court. So I'm very disappointed in this because I think it has some serious unintended consequences. Or maybe they're intended, which would be worse. But to be able to have a loophole so large that you can have unlimited amounts of money that go into third-party groups, and that that money can be spent on campaign advertising without really any restriction on what it's saying, really puts the voter in a difficult position. A voter who is trying to be educated about issues, trying to do the best they can to be informed, to be bombarded day after day with commercials and advertisements that we know are only partially factual. We know this because there are groups now that keep track of these things. And we know that many of these advertisements are false or misleading, partially true, and this is disturbing for average citizens. It should be disturbing, I think, for democracy. Here's my biggest concern tonight. It's not even any of those things. It's the fact that we seem to have lost a sense of civility in politics and a sense of safe space for talking about difficult political issues. I appreciate what I've heard tonight because what I'm hearing is that this actually is a safe space, which I appreciate very much. But what I would like to see are some safe spaces for our current elected leaders to be able to talk through issues without the media scrutiny, without the special interests that bear down on them at all times and all places, so that they can have these sort of relationships and discussions that need to be had in a democracy, in a well-functioning democracy. I think there's some responsibility on us, though, as well, as voters and citizens. And the responsibility is that we are the ones who are subject to these advertisements. We are the ones who listen or don't listen. We are the ones who choose to watch MSNBC or Fox News. When are we going to wake up and start taking responsibility for the decisions that we are making as citizens? I think that has to be said, and I appreciate the time to be able to say it.
I have a question. I'll take a moderator's prerogative. I have a question for Jay Heck. There are right now, I think it's 14 states that have some form of public financing of elections. It seems to me, forgive me, it seems like there are more examples of more or less broken public financing than there are those that really work well. Can you point to models? Like where is an example of a public financing system that really works that Wisconsin should use as a model?
Well, it's been said that Minnesota and Wisconsin are two states that are very much alike. They have more Swedes. We have more Norwegians. They have 10,000 lakes. We have 12,000. We have two Great Lakes. They only have one. We're alike in many ways. But the way they do their public financing, Maine and Arizona are the states most people talk about. It's 100% public financing. In Minnesota, it's 50% public financing. But every candidate, Republican and Democrat, agrees to spending limits in Minnesota. Elections for the state legislature in Minnesota are not won by money. They are won by ideas because everybody spends the same amount. Because the culture in Minnesota is that if you spend more than the spending limit, you're trying to buy the election, and that works against you.
Thomas Jefferson, way back when, said, "To compel a man to furnish contributions of money for the propagation of opinions with which he disagrees and disbelieves is sinful and tyrannical." I believe that.
That was Republican Party leader Kevin Hermaning, also Jay Heck, the executive director of Common Cause, and Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, also Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, speaking at last week's forum, Whatever Happened to Good Government in Wisconsin, a forum that also featured former Republican State Senator Walter John Chilson and current Democratic State Representative Donna Seidel. Now, we'll be hearing from all five of those panelists in the second half of our show. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio, reminding you to go to our Route 51 Facebook page and participate in our poll on the biggest threats to good democracy in our state. Once again, you do have four choices that you can make. You can choose the role of money in politics, redistricting, voter ID, or party polarization. We're going to take a short break for news, and then we'll be back with more highlights from the forum, featuring a question and answer session with the audience at UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater. Our forecast for north central Wisconsin, clear and cold with patchy dense fog tonight, an overnight low of 23. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 54. Currently 50 degrees outside our studio in Wausau.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
We are back with today's special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, bringing you highlights from last week's forum at UW Marathon County, a forum that asks the question, whatever happened to good government in Wisconsin? I'm Glenn Moberg. The panelists are Jay Heck, Executive Director of Common Cause, former Republican State Senator Walter John Chilson, current Democratic State Representative Donna Seidel, former Republican Congressional Candidate Kevin Hermaning, and political scientist Eric Giordano, the Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, the forum moderated by Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. We're not taking phone calls this hour. We do want to hear from you. Please go to our Route 51 Facebook page, and you can cast a vote on our survey asking the question, what is the major roadblock to good democracy in Wisconsin? The role of money, redistricting, voter ID, or party polarization? So let's resume our coverage with a question and answer session with the audience. You'll hear Jay Heck respond to a question about negative and misleading campaign ads, and then you'll hear Kevin Hermaning, Donna Seidel, and Jay Heck respond to a question about Wisconsin's new voter identification law.
We have a rating system on TV that evaluates programming on generally accepted morality. I would like you to discuss and hopefully implement a similar system that holds TV stations responsible and accountable for the veracity of the political commercials they air, including appropriate penalties for noncompliance. I suggest G would be great for truthfulness and helpfulness. PG would be pretty good for not bending the truth or obscuring reality significantly or mind-changing omissions. M for macabre, for appealing to feelings of horror without regard to truth or appropriateness, R, for repulsive, irrelevant, personal, with intent to sicken us against someone or something, again without regard to a candidate's ability to do the job, and X, exactly false and without merit.
Actually, who would like to respond? A rating system for political ads.
Can I borrow that for my kids?
Let me just take a quick crack at that to say, you know, political speech can sometimes be unbelievable and even, as you mentioned, without a lot of truth, but so can commercial advertisements. So, you know, my view, and constitutionally, and, you know, I think all of you would agree, there's really nothing you can do to regulate the content of these communications. What you can do is you can say in 60 days before an election, when generally people are tuned in to election issues, that any organization that runs an ad or a widely disseminated communication, if there's no other reasonable interpretation other than that's intended to influence the outcome of election, that's when disclosure gets tuned in. I'm afraid that although Great Britain and European countries are able to do many of the things that you've said, we have things like PolitiFact. We do have some newspapers that now look at these ads and try to, you know, judge the veracity of them. But, you know, under this system of government, which everybody agrees is imperfect but the best that's ever been invented, that's about the best we can do. But we should do it.
I'd like to commend the League of Women Voters for their stand on voters' ID law. Taking it to court, I think it is something that needs to go to court and go through the legal system. And I think the current law has one intention, and that is voter suppression. Now, when you look at the number of disenfranchised voters, we're talking tens, hundreds of thousands of voters. It's so disproportionate, it's just ridiculous to consider disenfranchising that many voters. So I applaud the League of Women Voters for taking this to court. It should go to court, and it should be overruled.
Now, panelists did speak on voter ID. Would anyone like to defend the voter ID law?
I would say that I don't believe at all that anybody advocating for the legislative bill or the governor who signed the bill had intent or desire voter suppression. I think it would.
Hang on now. Let's be respectful.
I believe that it was voter confidence that they are trying to put forth. When we look at the number of overseas military voters' ballots, which were disenfranchised, when you look at the number of duplicate students on college campuses, of students who voted both in their hometowns as well as in the campuses, at the campus areas where they were going to school, and sometimes political activists on both sides who sought to vote more than one time, it's just a matter of each honest voter wanting to make sure that no other voter had the opportunity to cast more than one vote. It's about voter confidence, not voter suppression.
The question was raised about what problem was this bill intending to solve, and was voter fraud a legitimate problem in the state of Wisconsin? I think that we saw a very thorough, exhaustive investigation after the 2008 election. And after that election, 19 cases were prosecuted. 19 cases out of millions of votes cast were prosecuted. Of those 19, 10 were cases that were felons voting. And this is a situation where felons who have been released from prison but were still under state supervision and had the ability to get and have a driver's license voted and have their and had the driver's license for voting purposes. I can tell you from a court official over a number of years, great misunderstanding about when a person after serving time from prison is eligible to vote. The other primary number of cases of the 19, six were illegal or problems with improper registration. So spending $7 million in state money, disenfranchising tens of thousands of voters, most of whom are seniors, are students, and minorities, is once again a far overreach and a reaction to a problem that does not exist in Wisconsin, and once again, the most restrictive law in this country against the tradition that Wisconsin has always had in terms of leading the nation and having just a stellar voting turnout, and really regarding the right to vote as a key right and encouraging and making it as easy as possible for people to exercise their vote. And that will not be the case with this law in place.
Donna, what's easier than free? I said, what's easier than free?
Well, I can tell you from a number of people I talked to, although the people without a photo ID are instructed to go to the DMV and get an identification card through there, are finding out, one, that the law was put in place that although these were at no cost, the personnel at DMV were not to say that they were at no cost and only make them without charge if the person asking for it knew in advance that that was the opportunity. And many of them have been charged $28. Secondary to that, many people need a copy of a birth certificate to get a photo ID, and the charge for a birth certificate is more than $20. Many times that is a hardship for people, and that has been challenged as being a cost to vote by making that necessary.
Let me jump in here for just a second. It would be one thing if currently in Wisconsin there was no form of ID required when you went to the polls. Now, but it's really hard, I think, to defend is we've gone from that to the most restrictive forms. In other states, you can use any form of federal ID, any form of local ID. You can use any form of school ID. You can use a gun permit. In Alabama, you can use your hunting permit or your concealed and carry permit. That's a form of ID. None of those are accepted in Wisconsin. None of them. The only things that are accepted are a student ID, although all the existing student IDs on campus are not any good. They all have to be revised. They'll have to be changed. A passport, military ID is fine. But why just DOT issued? And why driver's licenses? Yeah, but why just DOT? Why are these other forms not permitted? That's the very restrictive and, I think, indefensible part of this.
That's Jay Heck of Common Cause, also Democrat Donna Seidel, Republican Kevin Hermaning at last week's forum, Whatever Happened to Good Government in Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be back with a question about the influence of corporate money after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
You're listening to a special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, bringing you highlights of the forum, Whatever Happened to Good Government in Wisconsin. We'd like you to participate in our poll on our Route 51 Facebook page, asking the question, what is the major roadblock to good democracy in our state? We wrap up our coverage with our panelists responding to a question about the influence of corporate money.
I have a question for all of you, too. I saw an old movie just the other day, and a man from Africa pointed to the flags outside the UN and said, we should take down all the flags of the country, and what we should do is put up the flags of the corporations. That government, state or the country, are run by corporations. And what I would like to hear from you, I want to know, what is the hope that we have that the people can be in charge, what we've been talking about of elections and that, and not corporations? Because it seems to me, no matter what we say, it is money that is talking. And I guess from you, because I hear you all trying to work together, which is nice to see, to give us what you see is at the hope for the future.
Who has hopeful thoughts for the future?
I think what we've seen in Wisconsin and what we've seen nationally is an indication of how the future can be changed, and that is the individual citizens want to take back their government. It's what we saw this spring in Wisconsin when hundreds of thousands of people went to the Capitol to protest, to say, we demand that our voices be heard. We know that there was an attempt to rush through legislation that deeply impacted many middle-class families around the state without public input, and people saying we're not going to stand for it. The recalls, many people are opposed to that, but nevertheless is a result of people being angry, being frustrated, and feeling like they're not being listened to. On the national level, we're seeing the take back, the Wall Street protests. I think we have never seen a more involved, engaged public, and because of that, we can see a difference in this state and in this country.
That is hopeful.
I think I've already stated that I strongly support getting the influence of money out of campaigns. I think it's difficult to do it because of the U.S. Supreme Court decision. The only way we're going to change that is to get the Supreme Court to change it or to pass a constitutional amendment. I don't see any other way except perhaps we can get what works in Minnesota to act in Wisconsin with public funding of campaigns. That would take the money out as well, and I favor anything that would take the money, unidentified money especially, but there's millions and in some cases hundreds of millions of dollars at the federal level that is coming from corporations. Donna, I think that Wall Street is being manipulated and guided by the Democrat Party and by the unions. However, I think it is unwise. I don't agree with Rush Limbaugh. I don't agree with Rush Limbaugh that they are a bunch of know-nothings. I think we have a real concern that may perhaps be this is evidence of like being a canary in the coal mine. It is warning us of some serious problem and should be listened to. But I think the same thing about manipulating crowds. I wouldn't be surprised to find out that half of the people who were down in Madison complaining about the Walker initiatives on collective bargaining were from outside the state of Wisconsin. That was not democracy in action. That was mobocracy.
You know, your question was about business and its influence on elections and politics. And, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was in up to 2002 when corporations and labor unions could contribute soft money to campaigns.
Federal elections.
Federal elections, yeah. Exactly. And the studies showed at that time that both unions and business contributed largely approximately equal amounts to those campaigns and those candidates. It would seem to me that, for example, when you look at Citizens United, it appears to me that media organizations, electronic and print, should actually welcome the Citizens United decision because it guarantees that corporations, media corporations, can influence and be involved in political speech. Now, unless this gentleman's recommendation in the front is going to give me the power, and I think it should, to decide whether or not Rob Menser's editorials that he writes before elections or between them is either PG or R and repulsive, whose decision is it going to be that is going, who on the committees, who appointed by the legislature, which judges, is the Supreme Court a fair arbiter? I think most of you right now think no. And yet, who is going to appoint these citizens, these nonpartisan, unaffiliated individuals to these do-good organizations, these redistricting boards? In 1970, 1980, 1990, and 1991, yes, the judges got involved because the legislature couldn't come to terms. But Donna, would you rather have the legislature redistrict, or would you like me to be appointed by Governor Walker to a commission? What's the difference?
Well, I think a nonpartisan legislative body commission could be doing that. But I want to respond to your, you know, the point you made about the years when corporations and unions had the same expenditures. Things have changed over the years, and clearly the corporations have got exponentially wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. And states like Wisconsin have made a point to dismantle the ability of unions to support political activities. So the playing field, if it had been level one, certainly isn't anymore. And I think there's grave concern about that.
It's just the compulsory collection of dues, not the payment toward campaigns, not the donations of individual teachers or state employees to contribute to the candidate of their choice. It's the forced manipulation of the electoral process that apparently the governor and the supportive legislature believed in this year.
To get back to your question, I think one of the problems that I see is this deep philosophical divide between money as free speech and money as a potentially corrupting influence on political behavior. And I'm not sure that we're going to reconcile that. And here's the ultimate irony. The special interests that are the ones pouring the money into the election, apparently they're not convincing the voters as much as I would like them to be convinced otherwise, because they keep voting for the same system and the same candidates that have affinity to that system. So I hate to be pessimistic, but I think we need change. And I would really heartily disagree with Kevin on the issue of the ability of nonpartisan groups to have not necessarily a perfect record when it comes to trying to be impartial in redistricting, but certainly have a better shot at it than elected officials beholden to special interests. We see many, many instances of this. Retired judges, people with respect in the community. I mean, look at the workers' compensation. We just had a program on that here in the community. This is a wonderful system that's operated by both Democrats and Republicans, and they do a fantastic job that both, you know, business and labor can agree to. We can have these boards if we want them.
And let me just point to an example of where this works. Senator Michael Ellis, who I've referred to a number of times, after the caucus scandal in 2002-2003, got together with my organization and some others, Senator John Erpenbach, some other people, and put together this government accountability board to replace the discredited and the dysfunctional state elections board, which was highly partisan, and the state ethics board, which was toothless, and created an independent body which has an independent source of funding to conduct investigations into corruption in state government. The GAB's worked very well. It's got six retired judges at the top who were chosen on the basis of their nonpartisan credentials. They're not affiliated with any political party. They're judges. They're retired judges. It's about the closest you can come to getting that sort of nonpartisan entity. That's the best you can do. And it's worked pretty well. We could do that for redistricting in Wisconsin. We could get a panel of individuals like that. I think it's possible to do that to have a panel like that to do the recommending to the governor for candidates for the Supreme Court. I think there's a lot of things that we can do on a nonpartisan basis. But I also think that corporate influence or union influence or whatever influence by any special interest group is best combated by three things. Number one, transparency and disclosure. If we know who's behind the money, then we have some ability to be able to make a decision about whether we want to support a candidate or not based on the money that's behind them. The other thing I do think, public financing, at the very least, Kevin, it takes the sense of being beholden to one or two special interests or another special interest. You're beholden to the public if you have public financing. And by the way, the public financing doesn't necessarily have to come from the Treasury. It can come from a lot of sources. In Arizona, they have a 10% surcharge on criminal and civil forfeitures. The motto in Arizona, criminals pay for elections. And it works. So there are creative ways to do this. Just because it's difficult doesn't mean we shouldn't stop doing it. And I happen to believe that people of good faith of both political parties can still work together. And indeed, I would suggest to you the only lasting reform we're ever going to have is if it is bipartisan. Because if you have a partisan reform, then when the next party comes into power, it's repealed. The last thing is you have to demand it. So you have to make it a priority. You have to make clean, good, honest government transparency a priority. It's the only way reform will ever happen. And I am more optimistic than ever before, whether it was the Tea Party or now the other side and the protests in Madison. More people are engaged in this stuff than has ever been the case before. So I actually am very optimistic about the future of Wisconsin. Of course, as a reformer, I have to be optimistic. Otherwise, I would kill myself. Yeah. So.
Thank you, Wausau. Appreciate it.
That concludes our special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with highlights of last week's forum at UW-Marathon County. Whatever happened to good government in Wisconsin? With Jay Heck of Common Cause, Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, Republican Party leader Kevin Hermaning, former Republican State Senator Walter John Chilson, Democratic State Representative Donna Seidel, and Rob Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer. And thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Here are the results of our public opinion poll on our Route 51 Facebook page, asking you, what is the major roadblock to good democracy in Wisconsin? Number one, party polarization. Number two, voter ID, with the role of money in politics and redistricting taking up the rear. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we are heading out of town.